Hey, and happy Halloween, guys. It's that time of year again. This is Jen.
This is Carrie.
And we are celebrating, we are getting close to celebrating our 2-year anniversary. We're doing our Halloween podcast tonight, number 94. And we're going to discuss Carrie and my favorite scary movies. And these are not, we're not talking Billboard scariest. We're not talking IMDb scariest. We are talking our own personal scare the shit out of me and I loved it kind of movies. So, yeah, we're going to do that. Aside from that, there's been a little bit of sad news. We lost a very great actor a couple of days ago. We lost Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
So, no joke, no lie. Moment of silence, please. Matthew, you will be missed.
Indeed, he will.
And yeah, everybody knows Matthew Perry from Friends, and but I have to say I was pleased when the report came through that it did not look like anyone else had been there. There were no drugs on the premises. It looks like the man had a heart attack while he was in his hot tub, and he drowned. So, God rest you. May the lady take you to the Summerlands. But you discovered a rather interesting photo, did you not?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of a Reddit head, and I ended up finding a picture, and it was in the subreddit Old School Cool. And it was a picture from 1989, and it was Matthew Perry and Johnny, just the two of them, nondescript background, looking young and just cool as hell, smiling two big, genuine smiles.
Wow.
Which you don't see, you know, in a lot of, you know, photographs of anyone.
Right.
These days in the Hollywood game, and these two looked like whatever was going on, hey, they were having a great time.
Right. They were happy about it.
Yeah. And they seemed to, you know, it was an easy smile on both of their faces of people that enjoyed this other person's company. So.
Well, now Matthew Perry has been involved with various bands over the decades. He has been involved with a lot of different movies and a lot of the different sides of movies. So it's quite possible that he met Johnny on set or during a concert or, you know, there's no telling. When I get that picture, I will do a search and see if I can find out. Regardless, guys, I will post that photo once I receive it. I will post it on the blog. If anybody has any information on it, I'd love to hear about it. That would be great.
Yeah. That being said, it is very old school. It's 1989, and Perry has his jacket with the sleeves rolled up to the elbows.
That is the 80s, my friend.
Yes.
I used to do that with my jean jacket until it got too fragile.
Oh, my God.
My jean jacket is older than most of our listeners.
For real.
My jean jacket is well over 30 years old, guys, and I've got to do some patchwork on it because it's wearing thin at the elbows, at the cuffs. There's a couple of spaces on one sleeve where I got a little bit of road rash while I was wearing it. So, yeah, I got to do some patchwork on it because we are not letting it die. No, it must live. All right, we ready to get into the movies?
And I just sent the picture, so.
All right, let's see what I can divine from this picture. Oh, yeah. It has not come through, so I've got to wait on it. All right, we will come back to the picture.
Yeah.
When it shows up.
That being said, somebody also ended up pointing out Perry was 54.
Yes, he was 54 years old.
Johnny is 60, right?
Johnny just turned 60, yes.
Mm-hmm.
June 9th, he turned 60 years old. So there is quite, well, I mean, it's not a huge age gap. But there is quite a little age gap, especially back in 89. Aha, here we go. That looks like it might be at an awards ceremony.
Yeah, I can see that. Some sort of recognition thing. It's not the Viper room or whatever.
Oh, no, uh-uh. I was just looking at the background. Matthew looks like a member of the Brat Pack.
He really does.
And I wonder if he was ever on 21 Jump Street. Because that's the era. Because Johnny is wearing the t-shirt with the suit jacket.
Right.
That was always his thing when he was doing 21 Jump Street.
I can kind of see that possibly being the case.
So, so more on that photo. Mm-hmm. As I get it, as Carrie gets it, as it unfolds, we'll see what we can find out about that.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, perfect. So, we ready to get into scary movies?
I am ready to get into some scary movies.
Oh, awesome. All right, I went ahead and developed a list of five that truly just terrified me. And I'm going to go with the one that scared me the least first.
Okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street was great. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. I loved that movie simply because it was the drug addicts, it was the misfits, it was the kids with the problems that ended up being the heroes. Several of them died, but you have to expect that in a Freddy movie.
Oh, sure.
But I really loved... I mean, I saw this movie back, let's see, it came out in 1987, so I was all of 13 mm-hmm. when it came out.
Yeah, sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I remember seeing this, and, you know, it just, even at that time, I was a misfit, and, you know, it really got me. I just enjoyed the fact that they used, a lot of them used their quote-unquote issues, their problems, against Freddy, and I thought that was cool as shit.
Yeah, they started to kind of figure it out, and they could fight against him, if you will.
Right, and they realized they could be whatever they wanted to be in their dreams.
Yeah. And let's face it, I mean, a lot of people kind of acknowledge, you know, you want to pay homage to the first Nightmare on Elm Street, and it was fucking terrifying, yes.
Yes.
A lot of people kind of consider 3 to be the best movie all around.
I would agree with them.
Hot take, but I definitely see where you're coming from, and I want to at least say it's a tie. But 3 was excellent. 3 was excellent.
Oh, yeah. So what's your, out of your top 5, what's your least?
All right, so I have at number 5, and we're going back to the 30s.
Okay.
And I am going to go with Frankenstein, the original Boris Karloff Frankenstein.
Why? Absolutely, but why?
Well, and so a tiny bit of backstory. I promise I'm not going to do like UI and Dawn talked about, where the donor spends 10 minutes explain again, comes back. But when I was in college, I took a horror literature class, and the instructor had us read Bram Stoker's Dracula and Shelley's Frankenstein.
Right.
And I watched both films, Dracula and Frankenstein, and I read both books, something that I've never really done before. I don't really, you know, compare the book to the film.
Right.
But we kind of had to. The Dracula book by Stoker was definitely better than the original Todd Browning Dracula.
Absolutely.
But, And, you know, I read the books first. I really did not like the Frankenstein book. I thought it was kind of boring. It was definitely one of those 18th, 19th century slogs. But I went back and watched the movie, and they made that thing just special. Karloff was terrifying. The little girl getting thrown into the lake.
Yes.
And he was horrifying, but he was sympathetic at that point, you know, because he was a simple person and he did not understand.
Yeah, the flowers floated, so the little girl was supposed to float because the flowers are pretty and she was pretty.
And there was something about that that, you know, I kind of understood in a way, but it just chilled me to the bone. And then, of course, the lighting. Again, Karloff was just, you know, screw Jason and Michael Myers. Sorry. The original Frankenstein. How do you kill that, you know?
Right. Agreed.
I'm going with Frankenstein. It really affected me.
Yep. And you're right. That one scene, that was the one scene... I think I must have blocked it out because until you started talking about it, I did not remember that scene in the movie. But yeah, the one scene where he throws the little girl in the lake and he doesn't understand what happened, why she quit moving and talking to him and being nice.
And also accentuating that viewing was me watching Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein and how they were brilliant and spoofed it. And I just love the Frankenstein film, the original Frankenstein film. And it was terrifying. So number five, Frankenstein.
Absolutely. Good choice. Okay, for my number four, I gotta go with, let's see, what year was it? I gotta go with 2012, Sinister.
Ooh, okay. Now, let's talk about it.
That one, that one still gives me nightmares. When the little girl at the very end, I'll make you famous again, Daddy.
Jesus.
I got chills all up and down. Now, Sinister 2 sucked, but the original Sinister was absolutely terrifying. And it went beyond the paranormal as far as the terrifying. Okay, the man lied to his wife. She said she's not dealing with this again. And, you know, did you move us two doors down from a house where someone got murdered? No, I moved you into the house where someone got murdered. But no, you know, he's not honest with his wife. He's not honest with his kids. He's not even honest with himself as to what he's trying to accomplish. He doesn't give a damn about righting a wrong. He had a taste of fame, and he wants more. He wants to be the one who figures it out. It's not because it needs to be figured out. It's because if he's the one who figures it out, everyone will know his name.
Yeah, it's ego.
It is total ego, and he's doing it for the absolute wrong reasons. And he gets it in the end. I mean, he ends up getting paid for all of that. And it just sucks that the wife and the son also ended up paying for it.
Wow. Yeah. And you get a morality lesson at the end.
And it's not even really that. It's more that, pay attention to the small things. You know, seconds are small things, but you put enough of them together, they equal a man's life. The deputy was trying to help him. He was the only one in that town that was trying to help him. And he treated the dude like shit. Didn't even know his name. Had him in his phone as deputy so-and-so. You know?
Yeah.
The whole ego thing, you know, don't be like that guy. Pay attention to what's going on. Pay attention to what's going on in your family. Pay attention to what's going on in your household. Don't get so wrapped up in other things that you fail to realize the important things. I don't really think that's a morality lesson. I think it's more because morals come and go. Morals are a societal dictator. It's more a life lesson more than it is a moral.
I see. And the hubris of this guy.
Right.
I mean, he really indirectly sacrificed too much.
He killed his wife and his son.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for his name to be known.
Right. But there were a couple of really fantastic jump scares.
Yeah.
Which I can usually see a jump scare a mile away.
Yeah.
These I did not see. And so yeah, right. When it happened, huge. Yeah. Freak huge. Out.
Well, you know, we take jump scares for granted, and Sinister ended up very thoughtfully doing the, you know, they were very thoughtful with the jump scares. Great makeup, by the way, the horror makeup, and it was often brief, but very right. effective.
The paint, the blood splatter on the walls, the symbolism, right. And just so you guys know, the symbolism used in the movie, the professor who explains it was absolutely 100% correct. He did not, there was no, let's make up a demon and put him in here. No, people. This was actual symbolism for an actual
yes.
demon and an actual demon cult. So,
yes.
yeah, it was very well thought out. It was very well researched. And it was very well portrayed. I was amazed. It was beautiful.
Great art direction.
Absolutely. And using the Super 8 films, people of a certain
right.
age, people of a certain age, I have a shoebox full of Super 8 films right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're not anything like the ones in Sinister, but I have a shoebox full of Super 8 films from, like, Easter 1978 and Christmas 1979 and, you know, family stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of directors today, you know, we've gone digital, and a lot of directors today will tell you it's kind of like vinyl, you know, and audio. They're like, you know, you cannot top the feel and look of Super 8 film.
Absolutely.
And horror definitely is a good demonstrative way to portray it. You know, sci-fi, digital's probably a little better, but horror? Super 8.
Right. And the you mentioned the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
The demon in Sinister was so well done. He was not overdone. If you look at a picture of him, he's not even that scary. You know, it's not the makeup or the costuming that made him scary. It was what he represented. That was incredible to me.
And at number 5, you know, and we're talking a 21st century release, I think that's a fantastic representation.
Mm-hmm. So what's your number 4?
So number 4 is where we start getting into what, you know, in assembling this list, I have found that besides Frankenstein, it's either the 70s or the 80s.
Okay.
This one represents one of two directors that are on my list.
Oh, wow. And you've only got two directors on your list?
I have two directors on this list, and it is the great John Carpenter.
Oh, absolutely. John Carpenter has done some incredible things, but I would put him more towards special effects than I would scary. So what you got? John Carpenter, which one?
So number 4, I have The Fog.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Jamie Lee Curtis after Halloween, and The Fog was a film where kind of the wrap up is long ago in California on this coastal town, a lighthouse ended up going dark, and this ship ended up crashing because it didn't have any lights. And so, you know, 100 years or more later, this ghost ship and its occupants in the fog, as the film is named, comes back. And it was terrifying.
Sounds like it. This is one I'm going to have to watch. How did I miss this?
Yeah, The Fog.
But Jamie Lee Curtis is one of my favorite actresses.
Yeah, it was the ultimate kind of revenge film of the undead. You know, it's up there kind of with Ghost Story, which came out a couple of years or a year, I think, before. But these actors that were the undead, the drowned that returned, were really, truly terrifying. And they lurked. And John Carpenter was fantastic. It was kind of some jump scares, but it was the build up to the jump scares and just the hopelessness of it. And it was, I saw it when I was maybe 11, and it screwed me up. I'm not gonna lie, it really screwed me up.
Wow, I am definitely gonna have to check this one out. So that one goes on my list. Things to watch: The Fog. And what year was that?
The fog was 1980. Early 1980.
That is why, because I was not old enough to watch movies like that when I was that age. Because in 1980, I was 6.
Well, and the cast was amazing. You got Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, right around the Halloween era. You had the beautiful, we haven't talked about her yet, Adrienne Barbeau.
Oh, wow, yes.
I had a thang for Adrienne Barbeau.
Oh, please, tell me someone who didn't.
Right, I mean, just, and I don't want to, like, degenerate horror into this, but Adrienne Barbeau had a body that was built like a brick shit house.
Body made for sin, huh? Awesome. Well, damn, yeah. I'm definitely going to have to put this one on my Wonder Watch.
That being said, she was married to John Carpenter at the time.
So we have another
cast her.
We have another Helena Bonham Carter, Tim Burton thing.
Yeah. Steven Spielberg and Kate Capshaw.
Right.
You know, doing indie. Yeah. But you know, it was a fantastic casting. That being said,
awesome.
It was a fantastic casting. But, guys, if you want to do scary and you want to do eerie, like eerie,
right.
It was unsettling.
Okay. We ready for the next one, for number 3?
What you got?
All right. And I'm going to get laughed at. I know I'm going to get laughed at.
Well, this has always been a judgment-free zone.
Let's
see.
The sound effects are what killed me in this movie. The special effects were amazing. The sound effects killed me. That would be 2004's The Grudge. That movie scared me so bad. And I was dating a guy at the time that his sister-in-law, you know Eric, sister-in-law had a 4-year-old daughter who loved that movie and would make that noise anytime she saw me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, no. if you want to save your daughter, because I'm about to put her in a garbage bag, I swear to God.
Oh my God.
Because she would, that deep gurgle in the throat. So I can make it, but I'm not going to because it scares me.
Yeah.
That, and I mean, like, the scene where the hand is coming out of the back of Sarah Michelle Gellar's head. Okay,
yep.
That just,
classic.
I still, to this day, when I'm washing my hair, I'm like, don't look in the mirror. Don't look in the mirror. Nope. Don't look in the mirror.
That scene is so iconic.
Oh, man. And it did, that movie. I could not tell you now, because I've only seen the movie once. I could not tell you now what that movie, you know, what the end result of that movie was, but I can tell you how badly it scared me. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, yeah. You got to give her props, man. I don't give a damn what anybody says. That bitch is good. I mean, she's attractive. Now, she's not pinup model gorgeous. I'm sorry. I don't think she is. But she is attractive, and she has some acting chops that are very hard to equal.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we don't necessarily regard her as a scream queen, but between that and, say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the horror industry.
Right.
Kind of owes Sarah Michelle Gellar.
They really kind of do. They really kind of do, because she, I mean, as the, to paraphrase Scooby-Doo, you know, you come with your own ransom note. But,
right.
But, you know, as the helpless damsel in distress that pulls a 180 and becomes the kick-ass, you know, monster killer, she's amazing.
Yeah, and also worth mentioning, the Grudge was a remake off of an original Japanese.
See, I had heard that, but what was the original?
It was called Ju-On, the Grudge.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, it was, and I haven't seen it, but apparently it made quite an impression on Hollywood. Sam Raimi, when he saw it, moved that into happening as an American property.
That is incredible. Okay, so, and I love the Japanese. I don't care for Japanese film usually, but I love the Japanese, the comic books, the writings, the, you know, a lot of the philosophy is really awesome. So, and a lot of our best horror ideas come from Japan, so.
Yeah, you know, they had done The Grudge after The Ring.
Ah, okay.
With Naomi Watts, and that was based off of a Japanese property, so they remade it as The Ring, and so they were like, well, we've got lightning in a bottle, what's next?
Right, well,
they
The
Grudge.
The Ring is one I have not watched. I haven't been around anybody for any length of time that I trust enough to watch The Ring. So,
now I kind of want to watch it, but I don't.
Well, see, my mind does not, a lot of times it fudges the edges of movie and reality. I'm not saying that I think that it's going to happen to me or anybody around me. I'm saying that when I dream, when I sleep, my mind kind of blends the two. And so I get the nightmares, I get the, you know, the night terrors and stuff. So, yeah, unless I'm with somebody that I really friggin' trust, I'm not watching scary movies. So.
Yeah, right, right.
All right, so you're number three.
So, number three, and, you know, this really should, I'm hesitant about this one because it is more personal preference, but if you don't think it was terrifying, maybe it doesn't make the top five for you, but it's certainly going to make the top 10, but I'm going with the original 1982 Creepshow movie.
Holy crap, I didn't even think of Creepshow. Oh my God, yes.
Going with Creepshow.
Yes, the original Creepshow. Goes right up there with Cat's Eye.
Oh my God, Cat's Eye. Yeah, and right around the same kind of time, I think Cat's Eye was a couple of years after, maybe.
They were right around the same time period, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That 80s horror. And, you know, here we go, you know, with, you know, got The Fog, and now we've got Creepshow. And I loved Creepshow because it was that anthology. And it was a, we're going to screw you up with zombies oh my God, and you are screwed up by that. And then the next story, we're going to screw you up with cockroaches.
Right.
And that screwed you up. They kept moving on to different subject material, and every one of those vignettes was perfect and terrifying.
And it was absolutely terrifying. You're 100% correct. Oh, yeah. But what year was Creepshow? You said 1982?
82. It was directed by Romero.
Ah.
The man. And
that explains
they were all
things.
Stephen. And he was directing Stephen King stories.
Right, his short stories. Wasn't all of them based on Stephen King's short stories?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were actually Stephen King's entry into screenwriting for Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were his first forays.
Well, what's really funny is Stephen King is on my list. One of his is on my list, but it's not one of his recent ones.
Ooh, well, okay. But, you know, I mean, all of that. Stephen King was actually in Creepshow, you know.
Stephen King is in all of his movies. Stephen King is doing the Stan Lee thing. He's in all of his movies.
Yeah, it's like Alfred Hitchcock, Stan Lee.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, guys, name one of those stories. I remember there was that story where this executive had found out that his wife was cheating on him.
Oh my God.
With Ted Danson, of all people. And so the guy ends up burying him at the beach while it's at low tide.
Right, and leaving him there.
Slowly drowns and he films it. And you're like, oh my God, this is a horrible vignette. Guess what? It's not done yet.
Because then he shows it to his wife.
They're drowned, and it's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, that was truly terrifying. I mean, yeah. I don't even let my kids bury me in the sand on the beach. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was absolutely, I mean, it just because it makes you think about it. And you don't want to think about it.
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of totally different terrifying things going on in the vignette. Slowly drowning, that's awful. And then 5 minutes later, the zombies.
Right.
So, loved Creepshow.
Well, I am not going to lie. The way my mind works, you know, I sleep basically right next to my back door. And I usually leave my back door unlocked because I go outside to smoke. So, not thinking about anything, I'm about half asleep. And one of my signs outside is banging against the post. My brain translates it to zombie apocalypse. I got up and locked the door.
Yeah, that's not a good sound.
No, it's really not. No. Yeah, I intend to destroy that sign sometime soon. But yeah, but that's how my mind works. It's just weird. All right, so I did the first three first. Your turn, number two. Second most terrifying favorite scary movie.
Okay, gonna go with my second John Carpenter movie. And certainly, definitely, The Thing.
Again, I'm not familiar with this one.
Oh, come on. The Thing.
Give me.
It was Kurt Russell, and they were in the Arctic.
Oh my God! Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry.
And the creature that infected the dog.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
And that was insane. It was true insanity. Like you've got your jump scares, and you're like, "Oh my God, that's a zombie." This creature was none of those things, infinitely worse. Yeah, that scene with the dog all of a sudden exploding with tendrils
all
over the place.
Oh, I'm good with a movie as long as the dog lives.
And so, full discretion. God, and I hope that the cops don't come after me. I think the statute of limitations has run out. But
what did
when
you do?
I was... Well, when I was the president and vice president of the horror club that I had been talking about, we used to do viewings.
Okay.
On every other weekend. And myself and the instructor, Dr. Guzzi, we, you know, and she was more my age. I was an older student, but she had a child that was London's age, my daughter. And, you know, we would watch these films from like 7 o'clock until 10 o'clock at the university.
Okay.
And I thought it was cool. You know, I thought everything was going to be fine. We'd get our kids happy meals. We'd hit play.
Oh, you know, Lord. So you showed your kid an R-rated movie. Oh, shame.
Well, and, you know, London seemed okay. But a couple of days later, when she went to see my mom called me up and she's like, Carrie, what have you done?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, London is talking about this dog that sort of explodes and has these worm-like tentacles that are reaching out and killing people. And I'm like, and I didn't realize, actually, like, the importance of, like, the rating system. And you don't just, like, let your kids hang out. She's not watching it. It's fine. She's hanging out with the other kid, Samantha. So it's fine. No, she was watching.
Oh, but, honey, the thing about it is, regardless of the statute of limitations, your mother gave you enough hell about that. The cops are going to go, no, we're good.
He's been punished enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. That being said, she is still, London is still a horror film aficionado.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I like to think that I was responsible for that, whether it's good or bad.
Hey, but, long as she's not going around with an axe killing people, you're all good.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that being said, you've got Wilford Brimley. You've got Kurt Russell.
Yep.
You've got Keith David. You've got an amazing cast, and the setup is perfect. It is an Antarctic station. There's no escape.
Yeah, there's no. It's kind of like The Shining. There's no getting away from it.
Right. You are totally isolated. If you go out there, you're going to die.
Right.
You know, maybe the creature will get you. Definitely exposure will get you.
Right, exactly.
And I love that whole, you're stranded and you have to deal with this.
You have no choice but to man up and do what you have to do.
Yep.
Okay, well, my number two is my Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
It is,
okay,
Children of the Corn used to terrify me. I showed it to my kids and my kids are going, when does it get scary? I'm going, wow, you're right. This was a lot scarier when I was your age. Yeah, because, it lost its punch. My family went to church every time the doors were open from the time I was born until I moved out of the house. Okay? You know, the demon that was walking behind the corn and the, you know, the child being, the child being this infected demon and stuff. It was terrifying to me. Not so much to my kids, because we've allowed them to develop their own theology, I guess you could say.
Sure.
Instead of cramming someone else's theology down their throats. So, yeah, and when I watched it with them, I agreed. I was like, yeah, this was a lot scarier when I was growing up, I guess. Now, this next, the one I'm about to name is my number two. This Stephen King, it scared me when I saw it. It scared me when I read the book. It would scare me now, and I'm sure before I die, it'll scare me then too.
All right.
That would be 1989's Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary had Herman Munster in it.
Yep. Jesus Christ on a stick.
The cast is not really that you know, starstruck. But the people that were in it were incredible.
Perfect.
Great oh my God. And my mother, Carrie, you've heard this story. My mother had a Russian Blue, a cat that was the Russian Blue, the long-haired
Blue. No,
yeah. Well, Squeak was an indoor-outdoor cat. She would go outside when she wanted to. We had the dog door. She would go in and out.
I can't believe you're talking about this, actually.
She liked to play on the roof. On the roof of the trailer where I grew up. And I had just seen Pet Sematary, and I'd come home, and Mom's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's good. I'm fine. I'm going to bed. It's good." This cat fell off the roof, and the only thing she could grab onto was my frigging window screen. So I hear this commotion. I raise my blind. All I saw was claws, eyes, and teeth. Ah! Mom! Church is gonna get me! Church is gonna get me! Church is coming after me! Oh my God! Yeah. Terrified. It took my mother an hour to calm me down and to assure me that it was not Church. It was Squeak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. And that movie to this day terrifies me. You know, I do believe there are sacred spots around the world. I do not believe they're going to raise the dead if you bury somebody in them. I really don't. But there are sacred spots around the world, and there are sacred people who maintain those spots. And sometimes they have to move because those spots become tainted. So the premise of the movie is very accurate to me.
Yeah, great premise.
But yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I used to say that I have Cherokee blood in me. Apparently, I do not.
I know what you mean. Me too.
Yeah.
With the
yeah,
Creeks.
You thought you had, Italian. No, you came...
Well, Italian and the Creek Indian, and it turned out that was both bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, just a little darker skin there, honey.
Yeah. I just can't, well.
And you do. You look so good, Tim. Anyway. just wait till next summer.
Your guide. Yo.
But yeah, so knowing, and there are a lot of Indian reservations not immediately close, but we've got one called Rock Eagle. Just right down the road in Eatonton, Georgia, that is a giant burial mound that is shaped like an eagle. It's white rock that if you view it from above, it's shaped like an eagle. They have turned this into a camping area. I am not only upset, but I am disturbed by this. However, it is the one way that they can make the money to preserve the actual mound itself without having people come and steal the rocks.
They are doing that, right?
Yes.
Like they are using the money to
absolutely
keep it preserved.
There is 24-hour security on the mound itself. There is a 16-foot fence around it. You don't have to pay to view it. They've got a big tower. You can climb up the stairs and view it from above to see the whole eagle and stuff. You don't have to pay for that. So they're not trying to keep it for themselves or to keep it away from people. They are trying to preserve what can be preserved. So
I love that society for doing that.
Oh, for that, yeah, they definitely get kudos. But yeah, so anybody who's in Middle Georgia, go to Rock Eagle in Eatonton, Georgia. Eatonton. Definitely worth your time. But yeah, so, and you have creek reservations around you, don't you?
Oh, huge. Yeah, the Porch Creeks have actually created a burgeoning industry of, and they do... legal gambling here. It's the only legal sanctioned gambling allowed in the state. And
right, because it's on their reservations.
Yeah. And you know what? They are making bank. And not only are they taking advantage of that money, but they're also putting the money back into the community. And in fact, our large science exhibition that's been here for 20 years, the Explorium, is sponsored by them. And they ended up putting their name on it about 5 years ago, even though it had been operational for some 15, and no one had any objections to that.
Well, that is amazing. And I know that we drove through some of the Creek Reservation coming to visit you not too long ago. I'm looking around going, Dorothy, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. Dom's like, yeah, I don't think so. We're seeing the casinos. We're seeing, you know, this and that. And I did some research on it. What do? I do research. But I did some research on it. And the Creek, the Cherokee, the Sioux, any of the Indian reservations, if it is a reservation, it is outside U.S. jurisdiction.
Correct.
If you get in trouble on the reservation,
you
are subject to their laws and rules. And if you need extrication, you'd best call the U.S. Embassy because they're the only ones who can help you.
Yeah, they have their own enforcement arm. They have their own cultural preservation society and like governmental arm, of course.
But by and large, they don't need any of that for their own people. It's strictly for visitors because we're the assholes.
Yeah, and I have to say, locally for us, you know, we still have some civil rights problems with African Americans, you know, and how they're still possibly being mistreated because of some civil war and some slavery artifacts that we found. However, and that is awful.
It is.
But for whatever reason, everybody is okay around here, everybody, with the Creek Indian preservation and manifest.
If I can, I'm trying to think how to put this because I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush.
Sure.
There are a few people that have ideas that they are still owed restitution for things that happened hundreds of years ago. Now, that being said, the Creek Nation went where they should have gone. They went to the government and said, okay, this is what happened. This is what we want. And they took them to court and they won. They did not get what they asked for, which they accepted what they got. Bravo. Some of the other Indian nations have not. But they accepted what they got, and they have done miracles with that. Some of the other wronged individuals are not doing that. They are blaming an entire society for the wrong when it happened hundreds of years ago. And that's kind of an issue that both sides are having, and nobody is satisfied with it.
Yeah. You know, down here, if you're Creek, you're invited to the party. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody, you know, and it's kind of become the culture in the past 20 years. And I think you're right. They ended up kind of saying, okay, we've got to do a long game when we think about all of this. And they pulled it off.
And they've done beautifully.
Love them for it.
Now, I'm trying to think if
I'm not actually a Creek because we thought for 50 years that we were. And, you know, I ended up finding out that I wasn't a Creek Indian. I've got 1% Creek Indian in me, and I'm still like, you know, it's fine. I still love you guys. You know, of course, of course.
Well, Johnny Depp spent his entire famous life saying that he was Sioux. And he doesn't have a drop of Indian blood, but they adopted him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he is now... He is now part of the Sioux Nation.
Yeah, he is a respected ally.
Yes, he is. Now, I can't remember if it's the Sioux or the Cherokee, but one or the other still have hundreds of millions of dollars sitting in a bank waiting on them, but they refuse to touch it because they said, we don't want your money. We don't want the government's money. We want our land back. And the government said, no, we'll give you the cost of the land. We'll buy it from you. And they said, well, it's not for sale. We want it back. And so now that money is sitting in a bank somewhere and has never been touched because they are still petitioning. Oh, yeah. But they're still petitioning to get the land back. The Creek Nation realizes a lost cause. And you can martyr yourself all you want. At the end, you're still dead, and they're still getting what they want.
Wow. And yes. Yes. Yes.
So, you know, I understand it's not what you asked for, but this money could definitely heal a lot of your issues that you're having as a nation. And you're not even allowing your people that. So,
you know, we're in a time where people are much more aware of that. You know, it wasn't like this in the 80s.
No.
Now we are aware of this plight and we are more behind it.
Right. But at the same time, we have no possible way of convincing the people who live on that land, the government, or anybody else that, hey, y'all are just squatters. Get the fuck up, move the fuck on, and give it back to the Indians. Nobody's going to do that. It's not going to happen in my lifetime, probably not in my granddaughter's lifetime. I would love to see it happen, but it's not a feasible solution.
Yeah, you know, it being Halloween, and we talk about vampires and werewolves and, you know, whatever. But when it comes down to it, indigenously, this land, what you really should be afraid of is that hallowed ground that was here millennia
before
we were.
Absolutely, because, you know, there's
Poltergeist, you know, that movie.
However, Poltergeist focused on a young girl.
Well, but they built the house on Indian land.
Right, but that's the only issue, is that the Poltergeist would not have focused on a child. They would have used an adult to bring their message. So anyway, we are running short of time, baby. We got just a little bit. Number one, what's your number one? All-time favorite, scariest movie.
You know what it is. You know what it is.
Okay.
Don't you know what it is?
I
talked about it, I think, recently. You know what? I'm gonna bust it out. It's The Exorcist.
Yes.
It's The Exorcist.
Absolutely.
And I remember first watching that movie and how brutal. To this day, that is a brutal movie to watch. And, you know, a few people in my life have pointed out, and they are people of a certain age, if you will. It's so horrifying because, you know, vampires probably not existing, werewolves probably
demons
not.
Absolutely do.
Demons do, yes. Everybody's like, you know, you do kind of worry, maybe, you know, you're asleep and they just come in. You don't even know it.
Or you play with silly little things like, oh, I don't know, Ouija boards.
All right.
And invite something that you open a door that you don't know how to close.
Yeah.
And yeah, those things, I fully 100% believe demons exist. Not in the biblical sense, But in the ancient...
spiritual sense?
Well, in the ancient... something that existed long before we were here and something that will exist long after we're gone that has its own agenda, its own wants, needs, desires, and is so alien from us that we would immediately call it evil because of the way it operates.
And in the 21st century, we would call it a psychology problem. And so you're definitely not taking care of this problem.
Sixth Sense.
Right.
You know, this kid saw ghosts. And the psychiatrist said he was psychosomatic, that he was projecting, that he had this, this, and this issue. No, he actually saw ghosts. You know, he could not. He was trained out of the... even in the worst situation, the answer, however improbable, if it's the only one left, has to be the possible.
Right.
So, you know,
as Sherlock Holmes said, when you eliminate the possible, only the improbable.
Yep. But yeah, that was a terrifying movie, but it didn't make my top five. It made my top 10, as did Jaws, as did a couple of others. But yeah, it definitely made my top 10. It did not make my number one.
Yeah.
My number one, all time, scariest movie ever seen by me, 1968, Rosemary's Baby.
Oh my God, I knew you were going to say Rosemary's. No, well, I didn't. But, oh my God, you said Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, you did, because we've talked about this.
Mia Farrow and Rosemary's Baby.
Oh my God. There were no real special effects. There was not a whole lot of jump scares. There wasn't really anything that you would think of when you think of a scary movie. There was suspense. There was... what the hell do you call it in the filmmaking industry? You know, you never saw the baby. You never saw Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
You saw what happened after she had him. You saw what happened to her. You saw what happened to her as the baby was developing. I saw that movie when I was 10 years old. My mother had an uncle who loved scary movies. That was his thing. And we watched this. My mom's like, I don't know that I... And he's like, oh, you know, it's fine. It's fine. It'll be fine. I, to this day, every time I got pregnant, I had nightmares about my child or children because I've had twins twice. But yeah, that movie... Oh my God, I cannot express the terror of, you know, when they're gaslighting her and she thinks she's going crazy. You know, she's not going crazy. She's just trusting the wrong people. And it's just, it's the whole psychological deal that, you know, I think that's why I pay so much attention to people and why I'm so good at, you know, figuring out what's what and who's who, because the psychological torture they put this woman through was insane.
I love this pick. I love this pick. You know, I've actually heard, and you know what? I love the movie, and it was a horror movie in a way, I think, and I expressed this to a friend of mine that you've met before, that had a fantastic insight on this. I was like, yeah, it was pretty scary. And she's like, you don't understand. If you're a mother and a woman, it's particularly, especially like in the 60s and 70s, as a woman and a mother, it's very profound.
Would this be Miss Val?
This would be Kathy.
Oh.
Yeah.
My bad. Yeah. She is absolutely right.
You know, you're trying to just have a baby.
I didn't think she was that old.
She's 2 years younger than I am.
She's older than I am?
Holy, by like...
Okay, my bad. I thought she was younger than me.
By like a year.
Two. I was born in 1974. But, all right, so... Wow. We are running down on time. We have just a few minutes. Guys, you know how to reach us. Depheads and Hiddlestoners phone number is on our blog, so I will not go there right now. We have the blog, which is depheadshiddlestoners.com, or go to barryreese.net, click on the link. We have the email address, which is depheadsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. We also have Carrie's information.
I'm at Traveler2300 on PlayStation Network, and you can reach me through Hotmail at Mako3303, no spaces.
And that's M-A-K-O?
M-A-K-O, like the shark.
M-A-K-O. At Hotmail. All right, guys, so that is our Halloween episode. Happy Halloween. Merry Samhain. Please, guys, be sane, be safe, don't get stupid.
Damn good advice on Halloween.
Hey, celebrate, have fun, don't be stupid, don't go to jail.
And don't invite the demons in.
And don't invite the demons because they are out to play on Halloween night.
Yes, they are. The veil is very thin, ladies and gentlemen.
It is, and I don't think you can pay the rent.
I'm not looking to do that. I am actually looking to honor my dead and past ancestors.
Absolutely.
And that's what you should do.
Absolutely. Day of the Dead in Mexico as well. So
that's right.
Peace out, guys. Be sane. Be safe.
Peace and love.
Love and peace. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.